I'm just at that stage in life where sometimes I need my glasses and sometimes I don't. I'm also recovering from a cold, so I've got my water in case I hack, at the end of my speaking. So forgive me if that happens. So I come from an English background. I was actually born in England and came out to New Zealand when I was 4. I have Scots heritage, and we were a border clan called the Bruce clan, and I was born in Northumberland, which is close to the border of Scotland. My mum is from the Midlands of England, and I have a grandfather from the Yorkshire Dales. So that's where I hail from, and I have a close sense of place with Scotland. I visited there, and I stepped over the border between England and Scotland and just went, oh, I'm home. And it was the first moment I understood what Māori mean about being people of the land. I have a close affinity with Parakai, a small area in northwest Auckland, which is near to Helensville, but it's just over the bridge. I live on a 15-acre farm, and I live in a tiny house. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that when we get to the servant's principles and values. So this first slide, you can see that servants have taken that passage out of Luke, and we have adapted it slightly. And I like the way that we've worked with this. So we are very much about working with Jesus to see where the Holy Spirit is at work with the poor, and work alongside the Holy Spirit in those situations. The things I like about this is that we are servant communities. I know there's been some questions around missions and how colonizing can go on as part of missions, and how do we do it in a way that doesn't do that colonizing aspect, which is super important to servants, always has been. So we go to serve. We go into our communities and we serve the people. We don't come in with a program. We don't come in with a project. We go and we sit with the people and we get to know them. And out of those relationships come these beautiful expressions of God's love in those communities. And it can be so many different things I could tell you about. You need to go to our website and look at Stories for Transformation, and you'll see all the different things that have emerged out of these beautiful relationships. So we're servant communities. We've chosen to go to the urban poor because when servants started, most of the work was like in rural areas with World Vision, and there was no one actually being a Christian presence within the poor back in the 1980s. We're still there. We share good news together. So we're aware that the poor already know Jesus in lots of ways. He's already there. He's already acting. So we would read scripture together and we would ask, what is the good news to you out of this? And we would do this reciprocal learning, and we still do that. So this sharing of the gospel is super powerful. I've learned so much about God that I wouldn't have through the lens of the poor. And these big claims that Jesus made, we'd like to stand with those as well. And also to cope with the disappointment when they don't happen, to sit in that liminal space of the now and the not yet. So we would love to see the oppressed free. We'd like to see the blind have vision, and communities to be healed through this idea of living love together. And all of that would be seeing God's kingdom coming. So this wood cut was designed by a Filipino, and we just use it to just show how we've taken that part in Luke and try to live into that. I think the hardest thing has been the disappointments that come. The early teams went out very full of charismatic zeal and were praying for the poor, wanting to see people see and hear, and God doesn't always act in those ways. And it's how to still believe in God, and he does do miracles, but not all the time, and not the way that we expect. So one thing I loved about servants when I got to know them was these principles and values that they live by in the slums. And as Karen was saying, you know, actually living life differently is what we're called to do when we follow Jesus. And I thought, how on earth do I do this in a Western setting? How do I do these things? So right now that looks like living in a tiny house, which is 10 square meters. So I've chosen not to own a bigger dwelling. I live in community, so I share things with the people down the road. I don't have my own washing machine. I haven't got around to not having a car though, Karen. In Auckland, that's particularly different, but I've chosen to get a hybrid and I choose to use a bike when I can. There's just all these little things that, because of these principles and values, they have changed my life and has given me a sense of living as closely as I can in my context with my friends overseas in their context. And I would say we can all do this. We can think what principles and values are important to us that Jesus lived by that I can have in my life. I think particularly the values are important because it brings balance to life when it can get difficult. And one thing that I've had to embrace or wanted to is this idea of celebration as a value. So I've tried to look at fun, how do I have fun in life, and live out of that. So the question that was posed to me is, what has been happening in Servants in the last 5 years? So as I said before, when I joined Servants, there were these conversations about, should Servants stop because there's no Westerners coming, there's no new people in our organisation. And I went, oh, great, so I've taken on this new role, I've chosen to live by faith. Oh my goodness, am I going to be here closing this organisation down? What is my life going to, what are you doing, God? We went on that for a while, but we gathered at a forum before COVID, and we thought, actually, there's these new shoots happening. There's something going on. We can't actually see much of it yet. And so we decided we're going to stop having that conversation about should Servants continue on. The people in the field said, we're going to do this life in this way, whether you continue or not. And we ethically went, there is no way we can leave you to do that on your own. So while there are people interested in helping at that overseeing level, we will keep going. And I think since we've stopped that conversation, we've had people starting to want to join our teams, which has been really exciting. So we currently have immersion teams. So those are people that have relocated to another context that's different to theirs, and they're in Manila, India, Indonesia, and Cambodia. And then we have these linking teams. So that's what I am. I'm a linking team. And I share our story around New Zealand, encourage people to get involved with prayer, giving financially, going on short-term trips, which I'm planning for the beginning of next year, if anyone's interested. And so they exist in Manila, Switzerland, and North America, as well as New Zealand. So we have 8 teams. Now, the other 2 things I've got on that slide is just to highlight the way we work with local people. So we used to have a statement that said, God is in the slums, we want to be too. And you can see there's a slightly different wording on that top one. So our Filipino friends who have lived and grown up in poor areas said, actually that word slums, we don't like it. We live there and we just want you to stop using that quite so much. And we're like in the West, but it catches people's attention, you know, that's quite evocative. And they went, yeah, well, we don't like it. And so we went, okay, we'll change it then. So we talk about being God is with the poor, and that's where we want to be as well. This other statement is kind of a statement that we've come up with in the last 2 or 3 years, where we went to the whole organisation and said, we want to have a statement which is much more simple in English, it has a lot less Christianese in it, but it still captures what we're about. And so we had a lot of email movement around that, and this is the statement that we've come up with. We like it. It talks about Jesus, it talks about the Holy Spirit, it talks about God. We've kept on the idea of God's kingdom. It says where we are in the urban poor and Asian cities, and this idea of working together with the poor, with other agencies, so that those neighborhoods would hopefully flourish with peace, love, and joy. We wanted to have some specific, what does it look like in the neighborhoods we're in? If we're in there, what is it that we're hoping to see amongst the people that we have relationship with? But that was done in a way that was honouring to everyone in the organisation, which is quite difficult to a colonial power coming and saying, this is what we're going to do. Another thing in the last few years is we actually got together after the whole COVID disruption. And this is, as you can see, a very multicultural group. We got together last August in Indonesia, which was a dream of the Indonesian team. This retreat that we went to is where they have their team retreats, and they had spent years dreaming of having all of servants coming to this place. And they told us stories of being in the pool and just going, oh, we could be doing this there, and it'd be so good to have everyone here with us. So we managed that in August, and that group of people are representatives from each one of those eight teams, whether they're field teams or immersion teams. The only people that were missing there was the Swiss team. They came in by Zoom, and the team that had just gone to Cambodia, they said, we've only just got to Cambodia, we don't want to relocate for any period of time at the moment. So they Zoomed in with us as well. Super special time. And it was lovely. We had two new Indonesian members there, two young women. And they said the thing that stunned them the most was in the meetings, kind of the white leaders, if you like. So that's the tall gentleman in the middle and myself were on the international coordinating team. We would just be sitting on the floor. We'd just be hanging out. And they were just like, but you're the leaders. We went, yeah. So we're a very flat organisation. Said if we were in any other missions organisation that we're aware of, the leaders would be inaccessible. They'd be running the show. They'd have all the power. And it just came home to me that this idea of having a very flat organisation where everyone can have input is really countercultural for our Asian friends. And they struggle with it. And I just went, so this is where kind of the New Zealand Kiwi aspect of servants is still really important, which is in that ability to work well as cultures together is a bit of the kingdom of God here on earth. But it takes work, but it's so fun as well. So we've learnt how to be humble, how to come to each other as learners, to be aware of power and privilege, and to name it, and to talk about where it shows up. And that's not just the Westerners that have joined these other cultures, but it's within these cultures as well, because there's power and privilege there which affects relationships. So we've needed to unlearn ways of being and notice our assumptions, which are all really good ways of any work you're doing with anyone from a different culture. Everyone can use these. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about our other teams, just to give you a flavour of how our work comes to be and how it's becoming a much more Indigenous-led from their particular countries. So this is in Indonesia. The top right-hand corner is Anita and Yosiah. That's not actually their names, but that's just a safety issue for us. And that's why you don't see their faces. They're working in a Muslim area, and we have had some issues with particularly Westerners in this area, where they've had to leave very quickly. So they lead it up. And if you want to hear more about their story, Anita has just written a book called Beyond Our Walls. It's her story of 10 years living with the poor. It's a fantastic read because it covers what it's like having children in that sort of environment. So this House of Hope came about as they moved into this neighbourhood, and the children, when they went off to school, did very poorly because they weren't ready. So the mothers were saying, is there some way we could teach our kids? And this House of Hope has grown up out of that community. And there's about 100 children each sort of term that go through it. And they come and they play games and they sit and they learn for about an hour and then they go off, and we have three lots that come through each day. I think the beautiful thing with this is in the bottom left-hand yellowy sort of picture, that young woman there is a Muslim young woman who was a member of the school. She came in and she learnt as a child, and she's come back to teach other children in her area, which I think is a beautiful way for this to continue on. If we had more people joining this team, we'd be able to replicate this in other parts of the poor neighbourhood, and that's really their heart. They would love people to join their team, learn the language, get alongside, and be able to do this for more children so they do well at school. They also support pregnant women, and we have a lot of Bible school students coming sort of every year to just experience what it's like living with the poor. We're hoping that some of them will come back and join our teams. So COVID happened, and that changed a whole lot of our work. Indonesia wasn't affected very much because they didn't really do lockdowns. none of the poor took tests to see if they had COVID because it cost $80 for a test. So they just went, yeah, we're not doing that. People did die. They thought it was COVID, but in a lot of the poor neighbourhoods, it's just another thing. They're used to people dying around them. This was just another thing that was happening. And in Indonesia, they pretty much just carried on. In India, it was a different story. Because there was really quick lockdowns, people couldn't work. If they can't work, they can't eat. And they were locked in some of the areas where there was COVID. So our team went, how can we help? They sent the call out to those linking teams. They said, we need money. We need it now. And quite a lot of money came in within 24 hours. And we were able to go out and buy food, bring it back into the poor areas. And you can see here, it's a local house. They've bought these big sacks and they've made them into rations packs. So because we knew the local people really well, we knew who the poorest were, we knew the best way to get food to them. So this was just all organised. We had a bit to do with it, but the local people did most of this work, which was really cool. It just was so heartening for us, like we could just kind of step back and just help a bit. The downside was some other agencies got a truckload of food and parked it outside the poor area and said, come and help yourself. What do we think happened then? There was like a riot. So the government said, no longer can you distribute food, even if you're doing it well. So then we moved to giving out just all the masks and giving some education around how to stay well. So you're very, very different. We never do this kind of work. This is not a servant's way to do. We don't do charity. So for us, we just went, oh, this is a need in the community. They're asking us to help. Can we help? How can we help in the best way? And as soon as the government stepped in, we stepped back. But then we ended up with all this money in this pot for COVID. So we went, oh, what are we going to do with that? So we made a COVID relief fund, and people could apply to that to be able to do things in their communities. And we were actually able to give that to a whole lot of other agencies around India who weren't able to access funds. But as soon as that money's gone, we won't be entering into that work anymore. The Philippines had a community pantry movement. So this was very much the local people who said, we've got some extra food, let's share it. They set up tables, they put down the food. If you needed food, you came and helped yourself. And we just partnered with that. So as soon as we could, we stepped away from that food distribution work. And in India, the work that they're doing is literacy training, where they're teaching young people how to read and write in the poor areas, but also training up mothers and other people to be able to be part of that literacy training. We've got a young Australian who's about 23, and he teaches Hindi to other teachers about how to do a student-led approach. So he's been working with like 400 teachers and teaching them how to do this, a different approach to teaching people to read and write. And those are the other things we're involved in. That other photo is a group of young people I managed to take on a trip into India. We call them taste trips. They're not mission trips. We don't go to do anything. We go to experience what it's like to live with the poor. So it's quite a different... we'd never call them missions trips because that's not what they are. They're a learning experience. And my hope is that when people go on that, they just get opened up to the way God is at work in those neighbourhoods, and they will always have a heart for the poor, regardless of what they go on to do with the rest of their lives. When we do those trips, it's like a three-part process. We do preparation, we go on the trip, and we do a really good kind of debrief integration work when we get back to New Zealand. So I've got one of those going in January, if you want to come. There's some of the detail, but the cost is going to be more than that because the flights have changed. They're a lot more expensive than anticipated. One of those weeks is Forum, which is when servants people from around the world come and hang out. And we've noticed, we didn't realise this because it used to just be us hanging out, but it's where people come and go, we really like servants. The way you hang out, the way you share each other's cultures, people use their languages, and the way you are with each other, we want to be part of that. So the two other workers that have gone to Cambodia, Carol and Eunice and Myra, who are younger, they came along to a forum and went, oh, we just need to do this. So we're really looking forward to our next one, hoping that people will come to forum and get that same sense of call to go. So what's happening in the next 5 years? Well, we're going to continue to encourage Asians to be part of our leadership team. So Mark and I are kind of are the official people in ICT, but we have a team of 6 other people who are on all our calls and on our meetings. So they have as much of a voice as we do. What happens is we'll have a conversation, it'll be a big issue, we'll ask the Filipinos what they think, the Indonesians what they think, the Swiss, the Germans, everyone kind of gets to have a say. And we make a decision and then Mark and I do all the work. That's kind of how it works. But we would really love to see some more Asian people just saying, yes, I want to be seen as part of that leadership team rather than advisors, we call them at the moment. So that's one thing we'll continue to do. We'll continue to encourage local people to get involved. Like in Manila, we're wanting the Filipinos to be part of our team. In Indonesia, the Indonesians. In India, partnering with Indian people. Because that is what mission is about. Being in your context and making a difference and seeing where Jesus is at work. So for us, it's going to the poor in New Zealand. And I know that you're very much involved in a whole lot of stuff, and it's just lovely to feel the same sort of heart with you guys here. One thing that we are looking at in New Zealand is a residential program, which is a spiritual formation place. So one thing that's been highlighted to us is that there aren't many people going, and particularly not young people. And I worked as a counsellor in a secondary school, so had a sense of being part of this kind of anxious generation and just helping them to move through that and go out wherever Jesus wants them to go with confidence and a sense of knowing who they are and what they're designed to do in the world. So one of my dreams, this is where I live, Peacemakers. We have this big old house that we could have people come and live for a few months and experience the land and do some food generation work. And as a result of that, learn what it's like to be in community, do some theology studies, learn about servants' work overseas with the hope that they would go. So the top right-hand corner are the other people on the trust for Peacemakers. So the 15 acres is held in a trust, and those 4 and myself are on that trust board. It's my tiny house in the bottom right-hand corner. We have a labyrinth. We also have a rongoa, which is a Māori medicinal garden. And we would love to be able to use that more with the community. So there's a heap of potential. This is very much in its dreaming stages. But I have had conversations with people down here in Otatahi about what that might look like, which has been very cool. So that's a bit about what's been happening in the servant space. If you've got any questions, I'll be hanging around afterwards. Or if you had any now that you thought other people might have a similar question. Yeah, money's really helpful. I think like in places like India, just having white skin opens up possibilities where you can get alongside and be allies of the poor and work as a catalyst. That's what we've noticed a lot. You'll come in and simply because of where you've come from and having a pale skin just opens up possibilities that it won't for the locals. So it's how to use that very, very wisely in collaboration with the people around you. So we would name that privilege. We would say, how can you see that helping you? What would you like us to do, if anything? And we will spend as long as we need with those conversations. But there is something about having cultures that trust each other to be able to appreciate the beauty that you bring. So they would say to us, we love your ability to get something done. Rather than having lots of circular conversations around something and not making a decision, you can help us go, we need to decide something. And that helps them in the process. And some of them go, oh, it's so good that we've made a decision and we're not just still talking about it, which is harder for them to do in their culture. And you can also, when there's a high level of trust between cultures, you can also see the blind spots that they have. Yeah, and be able to just gently speak into that and go, how can we, you know, this hierarchy, particularly in Filipino culture, is if you're older, you get to have the say, which is very disenfranchising for young, passionate Filipinos. And so just going, oh, we've noticed this happening. Do you know that they're experiencing it in this way? So it's kind of like at times a mediating role and just helping each culture see what's going on that they're kind of blind to, because it's just an assumption that this is the way things need to be or this is the way things are. Yeah. And I'll never forget the first forum I went to. In the evenings, each team would say what was happening in their team. And then everyone would gather around them and then pray. And everyone would pray in their heart language. And even... Oh. And the Spirit of God in those moments was powerful. And just that... just that loving of each other's culture and language and all having the same heart and having a different expression of it and being there together, I'll never forget it. Yeah. Because we say to them, do you still want Westerners to come? And they say, yes, we do. And we're like, really? Okay. And then they tell us why and we go, okay, we can still keep doing that. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, Efren more than Becky. Yeah, so Efren speaks into that, and so does our young Indonesian leader, which is really good. And Efren's just come back into that. I think he kind of held back for quite a long time, wanting other people to come. As soon as he saw this young Indonesian guy coming along, he said, oh, I'll come so that I can help mentor him. And yeah, so it's a beautiful relationship they've got. Yeah, really good. Yeah, they're fantastic, yeah. So they're very key in mentoring the Cambodia team, but also working with the Manila linking team. So they're growing new leaders within that team. They're trying to take a step back so that, yeah, there's others coming on board as well, yeah. I'm just going to leave us with just... a few thoughts about being in a different culture or community. When Jesus sent his disciples out to go and share the gospel, he said, don't take anything with you. He said, go and be a guest. So that's a really vulnerable place to be. We like being in that place of being the host. I have these things that I will share with you. So I think a call for us is to be vulnerable enough to be the visitor to begin with until... we know, you know, the culture and how we fit there. That idea of being a curious learner, being open and respectful, aware of power and privilege, name it, seek to reduce it, share it, use it helpfully when asked to in collaboration with others, and live as closely as possible with the culture, but still share some of yours. I think that's really important too. Thank you so much for your support of the work that we do. And I look forward to coming back again and giving you updates. And we do have regular newsletters that come out. We love having a relationship with people. I love coming to visit. So I think this is the beginning of a beautiful relationship, as they say. Thanks.